This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the evening edition with Lee Chui Lin and Kelvin Yee. And earlier on in the show, we were asking you, what were your thoughts in terms of Youth and Sports Minister Syed Saddiq's plan, I suppose, to grow the esports industry and to make Malaysia a real player? And we've been asking you for your thoughts. You can keep them coming. 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages.
Justin says, I think it's a good win if you can get both, if you can develop both an exponentially growing industry like the IR 4.0. It's good that this administration is trying to get ahead of the curve. Only I do not want to see it in schools because gaming is addictive, while physical sports have health benefits and no one has ever gotten addicted to basketball, like playing overnight and such.
You mentioned schools there earlier, so I think that's partly where that's coming from. And I think that's a very good point, actually, about how addiction is one of those things in esports that we perhaps need to consider quite a bit.
Though I don't think there's been a general consensus yet whether video gaming addiction is actually a thing, or if they're using, or if, you know, if they're playing the game a lot, or they're just using it to compensate for other areas where perhaps they're not being fulfilled.
No, that's true. Ken says on Twitter, esports should start with a community, not dictated by companies digging into the scene purely for financial gain. Infrastructure should come much later. Remember how the one skate park in each Taman idea during X Games Mania a few years back failed spectacularly. On top of that, the current governing body who are in charge of esports are failing in every department. We need a clean slate. We're only creating Jago Kampung and acting as a hub when all we do is host esports tourneys. And local bodies, KBS for example, would be wise to acknowledge that esports is more than a handful of two or three titles which are popular here, but pretty much dwarfed outside. We only participated in one out of six esports titles at the Asian Games esports demo games. We spoke to one Amiral earlier, and he also mentioned the importance, I think, of more input coming from the community. I mean, he ended the interview by talking about the importance of ironing out the details, and I think the idea here is the details really do need to come from within the community, because when you have people with expert knowledge, why not use it?
And I guess just some praise for Syed Saddiq, I guess, from Syed Saddiq for approaching this in the right way by engaging the grassroots and also making sure that the ministry steps back, because you don't want the government to overregulate it. And he is also of the opinion that if with such regulations, it could actually slow down the growth of this industry.
Moving on to our next story, it is the final chapter, or not the final chapter actually, the next chapter in the long-running saga of the DTDI Rimba Kiara project. The government has said it will not scrap the controversial development order on the Kuala Lumpur Green Lung of Taman Rimba Kiara, but will instead propose that developers scale back.
Federal Territories Minister Khalid Samad proposed to developers Memang Perkasa to consider taking up only half of their originally offered 4.9 hectare site and proceed with a smaller scale development originally meant to include 9 high-end condominium towers and a block of 350 units of affordable housing for Bukit Kiara Longhouse residents.
So the minister said that this arrangement would mark a partial victory for Taman Tun residents who have been opposing the development and potentially save the government millions in compensation to the developer, and that the residents have to accept reality and do a little give and take.
Khalid said scrapping the project was not a viable option for the government, admitting that while many things were done wrong under the Barisan National Administration, the current Pakatan Harapan government could not undo everything due to cost, and the government would have to pay about 150 million plus as compensation.
And also, if he were to open that door, I suppose there are dozens, and these are his words, dozens of similarly questionable projects that were approved by his predecessor. So I suppose there's just a desire there to not set a precedent.
So he sees this scaled down version of the project as a middle of the road solution to this issue and urged Taman Tun residents to compromise.
The residents who have been battling DBKL since 2016 over this project, we've heard from them a number of times, said the development will destroy half of the public park that is a habitat of nearly 40 species of local birds and a resting ground for migratory birds.
However, Khalid clarified that the area earmarked for development was an open area and would not affect the actual park.
So to give us a perspective now, we have on the line lawyer Derek Fernandez, an expert in local government laws. Derek, thank you for joining us. You've been pretty outspoken on the Taman Rimba Kiara issue. Talk to us about your thoughts on Minister Khalid Samad's suggestion to scale back this condo project rather than scrap it entirely. How is this issue affected by the newly gazetted KL City Plan 2020?
Now, the relevant laws require that a draft be prepared by Kuala Lumpur in relation to their city plan, which they did in 2008 at a huge cost of some 15 million ringgit. And that plan was displayed for public objection and comment. Now, this is a fundamental requirement. The law requires where DVKL has any proposal to change any land use or development intensity in Kuala Lumpur, it prepare a draft plan and table that plan for the public to give their comments, because such a plan will affect the public very, very severely. Now, they did that in 2008, and there were many, many objections, and a special hearing committee chaired by Datin Paduka Halimatun, Dato Paduka Halimatun, who chaired the committee and had made certain recommendations after hearing everybody's objection. All this was done by 2010, and the recommendations were then passed on to the mayor for the purposes of getting the plan amended in accordance with those recommendations based on the objections and approved by the minister at that time to be gazetted. This is a very, very basic thing. Unfortunately, for a number of reasons, the minister refused to pass the plan. And in refusing to pass the plan, what went on was Kuala Lumpur did not have a city plan as required by law. And a variety of approvals were given, quite inconsistent with the plan, quite inconsistent with what was displayed to the public, or inconsistent with the objections, that resulted in the mess that we have here today. So we go back to Bukit Kiara. If you look at the plan, it was proposed as a park. And there was no proposal for any development on that park, on the Kiara Park. And nobody objected, of course, because why would you object if there's going to be a park? And suddenly we find, many, many years later, in 2018, under the present government, the audacity to put into that plan development on the park. Now, where did the development come from, and how could it be in the plan when it was never shown to the public? So my statement has been very clear on this matter. Do not pull the wool over the public's eyes. You pass the plan that is based on the recommendations of the hearing committee. It matters not whether subsequent to that any approvals were given. It is irrelevant. You deal with that later. How do you deal with it? You may want to examine those approvals to whether they were lawfully given, whether they had breached any laws, whether there was any element of impropriety in those approvals, or whether they are okay. And you then can amend the plan based on those approvals, but subject to public hearing, and try then to mitigate against the impact of those developments where it's already up. So I find in this case simply a total misunderstanding as why even have a plan. If you are going to allow development given on an ad hoc basis to then be put in the plan when the law says you should have actually displayed that plan with the proposals to the public. So the public in Kuala Lumpur have been deprived of a very, very basic and fundamental right. And I question why the current government is indulging in this.
So Khalid Samad also said that part of the reason is that the ministry would have to refund the developer more than 200 million ringgit for this project alone. And if they were to scrap every development project throughout KL that's been approved through perhaps similarly questionable means, that would amount to a huge cost. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I'm surprised. Why does he say that? Why is the minister saying he has to refund in the first place? If an approval was obtained in violation of the law, if an approval was obtained, even though it was inconsistent with the draft plan which was supposed to be passed, why should DVKL refund the money? Secondly, who was the money paid to? Why does he say the government has to refund it? If I'm not mistaken, in the Mount Kiara case, some monies were paid for land premiums to the government. No problem, the government can give it back. It's all black and white. But if monies were paid to Yayasan, why should that be refunded by the government? I mean, what is Yayasan? Yayasan is a private company, which happens to be headed with, at that material time, by the mayor and the minister. What has that got to do with DBKL? And that's not DBKL's problem. So I don't think that you have to refund. You, in every case, you need to examine the facts. Now, the federal government has looked at a number of projects. ECRL, Gamuda has looked at Johor, and they are quite happily, in many cases, said where they feel it unfair, they have got themselves out and said, no, they're not going to participate in this agreement, and they've set aside that agreement or said, no, we are not going to pay that kind of price. So the whole question is, you need to look at each of these cases to determine whether it was a fair transaction. And if it's not a fair transaction, I do not believe any government can be compelled by saying, oh, the contract we signed. No, that's not so. The law of contract does not say that. The law of contract says that a contract may be a nullity if it is against public policy. And public policy can include once contracts that are so one-sided that a government will not have entered into the contract, or it can include contracts that attempt to circumvent the provisions of a law. I mean, here is, you don't pass the local plan deliberately, and then you approve something which is inconsistent with the local plan had you approved it. I mean, those are good grounds for you to say no. And then you go back and you renegotiate and you sit down and talk.
So could you also help us understand what the status was of the KL City Plan 2020 before its gazettement?
Well, when you talk about before it is gazetted, you need to understand something. Again, I notice incorrect information being given. Some statements that the KL City Plan or its draft KL City Plan is not a legal document. That is total rubbish. Section 13 of the Federal Territory Planning and Development Act 1982 says that such a plan must be prepared. And I think some 15 million ringgit was being spent on the preparation of that plan. So, of course, it's a legal document. And not only is it a legal document, it was displayed for public hearing. The public have given an objection. And after the public has given the objections were heard and rulings were made on the objection. And what was supposed to happen was, after those rulings were made, it is to be incorporated and the plan then signed off by the minister and gazetted. The signing off and gazetting never occurred for a variety of reasons, because suddenly some people are unhappy with the rulings of the committee, or they have other ideas which were never shown to the public. And subsequently, development orders were given, many of which, not all, are going against the very plan. Now, the law says, Section 19 of the Act says, you should not supposed to approve any development that is against the plan, unless there are exceptional circumstances why you want to do that. But if you talk about some 270 development orders against the plan, that is ludicrous.
So, Hannah Yeo, who's also the MP for Segambut, called for the development order to be revoked for the condominium project. Is it a complicated or difficult process to do so?
Very simple. You just say that this development order is invalid because it was actually against the plan which was supposed to be passed, and the plan was deliberately not passed. Okay? And we are not going to allow that development order. Now, of course, if the buildings are up and all that, then, of course, other people's rights are involved. Then we need to mitigate the situation by saying, yes, although this plan clashed against the draft that was supposed to have been passed but did not pass, unfortunately, buildings are already up and people have already bought that property. So now we will now discuss how to minimize the impact by upgrading the surrounding infrastructure. And stakeholder dialogue can take place between residents. I mean, you just have to be honest with the residents who say, the building's already up, what can we do? At the moment now, we can't go and break it all down. So let us discuss how can we accommodate, how can we reduce that impact on you. But you certainly will not be going ahead and approving further developments that are not even started and that are inconsistent with the draft. If you look at Titi Wangsa, there is a piece of land that was supposed to be for infrastructure and a playing field, and now they want, under the new draft, no, we can't even call it a new draft, that's not even a KL plan, it's just put in a change for some high-intensity development. I mean, why would you do that? After all, they haven't even started work. So I think the minister needs to get proper advice, because I do not believe that he may be getting the correct advice on these matters. I understand the predicament he may face by coming into office and taking over a mess. But in sorting out that mess, he must understand that many KL residents have suffered tremendously and that you need to adopt a holistic position in, first of all, preserving the integrity of the process by stating that only that plan that had gone through public objection can be passed. And anything else, we will deal with it later. But not lump it all together. And I suppose this is dismaying a lot of residents.
Thanks for offering your perspective, Derek. That was lawyer Derek Fernandez with his thoughts on the Federal Territories Minister's suggestion not to scrap the Taman Rimba Kiara condominium project completely and instead just to kind of scale it down. If you'd like to hear more on this issue, The Bigger Picture spoke on Monday to the TTDI, TTDI Residents Association, as well as Save Taman Rimba Kiara Working Group. You can find the podcast by searching the title TTDI versus DBKL, A Problematic Plan.
So this is, and I guess will still be an ongoing issue. Khalid actually said that his view that the project cannot be cancelled and could be scaled down was just his view for now, that he's still open to ideas.
I don't know whether that's a good thing, whether or not it would be so easy to persuade him one way or the next. I hope that's not what he's saying. I think he's just saying this is where it is. But the for now gives me pause, I guess.
Well, he says if you could come up with a solution which takes into account the interests of all parties, of course I can consider.
Let us know what you think. Earlier, we heard Federal Territories Minister Khalid Samad saying that this is considered a partial win and that, you know, Tamantun residents will just kind of have to bear with certain realities, certain financial realities. Talk to us, especially if you're somebody who's going to be affected by this. Let us know what you think. Is a partial victory enough? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we've got more music coming your way. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.